a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Cue It Up podcast. I am excited to be joined this week by Raleigh Williams. Raleigh, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
I am doing probably slightly better than you are, given your slight disappointment of not being able to play in the U.S. Open coming up.
Yeah, it's a serious bummer. I mean, I understand that in order to stem the tide of a global pandemic, you shouldn't have 256 players from every country in the world coagulating in a major metropolitan city and touching the same tables and equipment as everybody else. But it's still a bummer, and I'm sad, but I understand.
And there were two confirmed cases of players that were playing at BCA last week that showed up. So
for real?
Yeah, this is.
Oh my god!
It is a real thing. So. That was announced this morning, so it's a real thing, and we're trying to keep people safe, I guess. So what can you do?
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of thought it was funny that Corey Duell was playing in, like, a mask from Home Depot and white butler gloves, but maybe he was the smartest one of us all.
Yeah, well, I saw once he was using a bridge to break with, so I don't know what the point of that one was.
Maybe that's just his new pattern breaking method.
You know, he's done a lot of things in his career that have revolutionized the break, or at least revolutionized ways of being creative on the break. And I guess at this point, I can't probably question that. So,
yeah.
What do I know?
Yeah.
Maybe in 2 years from now, I'll be using a bridge to break the balls too. But I mean, obviously it's a bummer. You're not going to be able to play in the U.S. Open this coming, well, it's postponed, right? So maybe we'll be playing it in September or October or something like that. But
yeah, could be.
What does this mean? Because you had kind of a series of videos that you were coming out with, the road to the U.S. Open. What does it mean for all of the video content that you've made for that? And is that going to continue even if it's postponed to, let's say, September, October, something like that?
Yeah, I think so. And just to, I mean, I don't expect everybody who's listening to this to know what I'm up to on YouTube, but I am not that good of a pool player, but I applied to and got into the U.S. Open as a way to kind of show people, like make videos about it, about the process and about the event, and show people who maybe wouldn't get to play in the U.S. Open their whole lives, you know, because maybe they didn't want to basically donate $1,000 to the best players in the world. But I've been making this video series about what the journey is like, and I was being coached by Hunter Lombardo, professional pool coach and also a pro player. So that's a little bit of a backstory. Yeah, so we shot all these episodes and they're up on YouTube right now. And I have maybe three more that I have shot that I haven't edited yet that I think I will just finish editing and just make it clear that I know that it's canceled and it's just like, hey, by the way, here's the rest of the footage. These are good videos still. And I still plan on playing in the U.S. Open when it's either unpostponed or the 2021, depending on which one comes first. That is provided that all of society doesn't completely shut down and become sort of a Mad Max style hellscape where we're all cruising around on motorcycles trying to fist fight each other for water credits in New Mexico or whatever.
Which sounds exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad reality. Maybe. But I'm just saying in that reality, probably Matchroom Sports isn't hosting a bunch of, like, organized billiards tournaments.
Maybe instead of fist fighting, you play races to 100.
Wow, can you imagine?
But Shane the table Van Boning is going to be terrible. So unquenched.
Dude, like, dusty and, you know, not. I think I'd rather fist fight than play race to 100 on a bad table.
Shane Van Boning would own the entire world's water supply.
You know, there'd probably be other people in other sports who would want their sport to be the thing that they play for water over.
Yeah, probably, but this is a pool podcast, so.
That's true, yeah. You don't have to cater to those people.
For sure. So you have, you said three new videos that are coming out as far as content. We're hoping, obviously, that this is not canceled. It's just postponed. We can't know the future at this point, but we're hoping. So if this does turn into a 2021 proposition, is that going to be a basically just a two-year-long road to the U.S. Open? You're going to get to
content? I mean, I laugh at it, but like that is it's no crazier than what an actual pro player would do to actually compete at a real level. You know, like I guess the idea of making a video every single week for like 60 weeks in a row is not that appealing to me right now. Just because it takes more work than it just takes a lot of work. I like doing it. It's fun for me, but it also like it's a little daunting being like, okay, today's Wednesday. We got to get up at like 7 a.m. and go to the pool hall before it opens and shoot a bunch of videos. Yeah, I mean, probably I will have to do a pretty serious training regime in order to continue this essentially the cancellation of this year's tournament has given me the ability to take this as seriously as I want to. So if I want to take it seriously and actually like try to win a couple games against these people who would otherwise just shoot me full of holes, maybe this is the opportunity that I've been waiting for. But also it's like a lot of work and I'm in grad school right now also, and I have another pretty much full-time job. So something's got to give, but maybe that's grad school. Maybe I just say, you know, I'll take a bunch of D's and just play a lot of pool.
Well, I'll say this. If you're ever going to be a good pool player, you have way too many things going for you in your personal life. That you're just never going to be a good player if you continue, you know, being successful off of the pool table. Those things just don't coincide.
That's really nice of you. I mean, at the very least, I have a girlfriend who I love, so I got to get rid of that, right, in order to be better at pool.
Either that or you got to take up some sort of hardcore drug. You know, you can have a stable love in your life, but you have to then incorporate some other type of evil to offset that.
Yeah, maybe like I could sell prescription drug to minors or something.
Ooh, why do we got involved in minors? They never stood a chance.
Like coal miners, I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, West Virginia. You're close to there.
Yeah, really close.
Yeah, that's really smart. Yeah. Why didn't I think of that?
I don't know, but don't publish this podcast now so that I can get away with it.
I'm going to send it straight to the FBI.
No.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, all you have to do is just get rid of your girlfriend. You don't have to do that.
But that's true.
You can't be a good pool player and have good things going on in your life at the same time.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. I'll sacrifice everything to win one game at the U.S. Open.
So at this point, all joking aside, the work that you do is having a podcast, I understand, and video editing is even like a juiced up version of this. So I'm a little lucky that I don't have all of the variables that you have to worry about editing for this. So I do enough podcasting to understand the back end work that this takes. The viewers see the finished product and it's great that they spend, you know, 20 to 30 minutes sitting down watching it, but you know, usually a 30-minute video probably takes you 6 to 8 hours to do. I mean, that's not something you have to address if you don't want to, but there's a lot of work that goes into this. And with all of that being said, you are trying to actually practice and get better at pool while doing all of this. At the end of the day, if you are going to try and win that game or two, how much do you think is going to go into actually creating content and videos, and how much is going to go into actually just practicing and incorporating all the things that you're learning in these videos?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I have a problem in general, and I think it's like when I'm doing these videos where I'm taking a lesson, I am simultaneously taking the lesson and then also directing the shoot and making sure the audio is clean and making sure that everybody that is involved in it is framed properly and that my cameraman is in the right spot. And I'm also like thinking about how the edit is going to come together while I'm talking and while the teacher is talking. And so there's like a lot of times when I know what Hunter is saying, I can't use, because maybe it's either the same thing as we already said, or he's faced towards me too much and you can't see him, or, you know, like there's just a lot of little things that I'm thinking about when I should be thinking about only what Hunter is saying. So the learning actually doesn't happen in my brain until I am editing it. weirdly enough, I learn the most when I am watching it back and putting the shots together. So, you know, just to answer your question, I think it's really fun for me to make videos, and I like the videography aspect of it, but I need to be actually practicing twice as much as I am editing if I want to improve in any serious degree. And that's tough. So I sort of am in this world where in order to make good videos, I have to be good at pool. But in order to be good at pool, I can't make videos because I need to practice. So it's like sort of striking a balance, playing as well as I possibly can while not having that much time to play. Yeah, so I guess the answer is I'll never get that good at pool.
That is kind of this crux, right? You want to be practicing and you want to get good, and you have this unique opportunity where you, given your platform and given the mission that you have with kind of growing the background of pool, that you get to work with some really, really, really cool people. I mean, you've worked with Hunter Lombardo, and you've worked with Ralph Eckert and Jennifer
Beretta, and Torsten Homan, like Emily Duddy, John Smith, Florian Kohler. Yeah, I mean, these
Alex Pagulayan.
Pagulayan. Dr. Dave.
Yeah.
Man, don't leave Dr. Dave off that list. That dude's the man.
You've had the luxury of working with some of the most influential pool instructors and even players of the last several years in pool. That is, I mean, the knowledge that's got to be coursing through your veins. It's just a matter of putting it all together, right?
I mean, I think so. Yeah, I honestly, if I just worked with them and didn't film any of it, I bet I would be a much better player than I am right now. And I think it's because I don't get the full benefit of being with them because I am so concerned about how it's going to look on a screen, like how to make the most instructional or slash like the best video out of it. I mean, there's a little bit of a drawback there, but also like, you know, I wouldn't be able to like hang out with, you know, just like, I wouldn't have the excuse of like hanging out with these people if I wasn't making videos from it. So probably I wouldn't, you know, have met them otherwise, which is nice.
I can relate
to
that.
But yeah. And also like, I think at this point, I probably should be way better than I am. So I think I have to admit to myself that I'm not very naturally talented at pool, which is a bummer. But also, you know, I guess I've just like worked at it enough that I can play a little bit better than I have been able to. I think that I don't have the natural talent that somebody might need to be a really high level of pool, which only becomes clear after I've like played enough and I'm like still getting my ass kicked by these players.
Well, this is a good lead into the next question I was hoping to ask. Was you kind of gave your resume of all the things that you're doing right now. You're in grad school, you have a full-time job, you have a girlfriend, you have all of these videos and all this content. How often do you actually get to practice? Because, I mean, me doing the podcast, I have seemingly less going on than you do, and I have almost no time at all to practice. So where do you actually find time to incorporate all of these things that you're learning throughout doing these videos?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I go to Columbia and I live in Brooklyn. And just a little like Manhattan, New York geography, I have to go straight past my favorite pool hall, Society Billiards, every time I go to school. That means that, I mean, I have like a 9 a.m. law class 2 days a week. So I'll like go to that class and then I'll be so, you know, just like devastated from learning the kinds of, so I'm in basically climate science and law and policy school. What the world is doing to try to combat climate change. And it turns out it's pretty much nothing, not climate change. Climate change is a devastating force that will kill millions of people. But the things that we're doing to combat climate change are very minimal due to some political gridlock and people not believing what the majority of climate scientists are saying. But I'll get so depressed from that once I'm done with class, at like 2 or something, I'll go straight to the pool hall on my way home to do homework. So, you know, 2 days, 3 days a week, I'll stop by and get a couple, you know, an hour here, 2 hours there. And And society, because of this, the deal that I worked out with them, they let me play for free and they let me use their place to shoot videos for free. So anytime I'm there, I don't have to pay the table time, which is great because I am a broke student. That also is a really nice, little perk. So by the way, if you're ever in New York, Society Billiards on 21st and Broadway, don't forget to stop by, provided that the plague goes away.
I should say that there are a lot of really iconic pool rooms in New York. And I had never heard of Society Billiards until I started watching your videos. So that is great. A destination for me if and when I make it to New York, which Jennifer Beretta offered me risotto if I make it. So I might have to make it out there just so I can have some of that risotto.
Risotto? Is there good risotto? Oh, does she make risotto? Or
she said that she loves making risotto.
Great. I mean, not weird. Sorry. Amazing. Good job.
Yeah. So, did you have anything else with that? I kind of cut you off to talk about.
No, I think there aren't a lot of pool halls in New York, but again, my girlfriend plays pool and is awesome at pool. So when and she's also in school, she's at NYU right now. So sometimes we'll both come home from a long day at school and we love this bar nearby our apartment. So we'll just go there and just wipe people off the table. We just won't lose for 2 hours at a time. And it's so fun. So I'll get some, I think it's important to do drills and train and be specific and strategic with how you play, just so you can work the shots that you're bad at so that you can get not bad at those shots. But it's also super important to just fuck around and play sometimes and drink and have a good time and talk to your opponents and do some fun, light trash talk where everybody's cool with it. So kind of a combination of being able to do that at a bar table and then play for seriously at Society Billiards. That combination allows me to kind of maximize my practice time without, making me take huge chunks out of my day.
That is definitely a rabbit hole that we probably shouldn't venture down, because I really like talking about that, that paradox between playing something for fun and playing something. Okay, let's go down this rabbit hole because it's fun.
Let's get into it, Nate.
I think what are we doing right now?
You got a party you got to go to? No, everyone has the coronavirus.
That's true. That's true. Or are buried up 25 feet under their house to not get it. So yeah, this was a really weird paradox for me personally with my game. I started playing the game when I was 4 years old. So I had played the game for a very, very, very long time without ever having the idea of alcohol and the game can be fun. In my training routine. So basically the game was always about getting better. It's always about, how do I get better? It's how do I, advance to the next level? It's how do I make this shot? How do I learn how to do this drill? It's something like that. The game was never fun. And when I showed up to a bar when I turned 21, and my buddies wanted free drinks all night is essentially why they hung out with me, so that we could go to a bar and we could play for drinks and I'd basically win them drinks all night. So,
oh, you were just their road dog.
Yeah. Yeah. I was
just whoop everybody.
I was there to get them free drinks. So man, I have terrible friends. Anyways, I'm going to yell at them later. Cause I'm still friends with them, but,
well, I mean, you got a pool podcast now, so obviously you love pool.
Yeah. But the idea that you could actually play pool, drink, and have fun was a very, very alien thing for me when I was 21, and I really, really struggled with it. I didn't know how to have fun when I played pool, and to the point where, if I would lose to my friend, I'd sink the eight ball in out of turn or something like that. I'd instantly get mad, and they would be, the happiest people in the entire world because they just beat, me, in their minds, the greatest thing that ever happened to a pool tournament because they don't know anything about pool. And they'd get super excited, and I'd be like, yeah, double the bet, let's go. And yeah. I have to remember that this is all fun. This is just messing around. And it took me a long time to get to that point where I was actually able to do that.
Yeah, I that really resonates with me, Nate. I think when you play against people, I mean, you go to a bar that's got a pool table, and the chances are very good that you should win every game, right? So every time you play, you have nothing to gain and everything to lose. Because if you win the game, of course you won the game. You were supposed to win the game. But if you lose the game, now you feel a little embarrassed that you lost. You know, you sunk it out of turn. Oh, how could I have made that shot? And I think the most important thing is to, like, have a really, really good attitude. And then also know in your heart, like, look, if we had to a race to 100 on a Mad Max dusty pool table, I would get all the water every time. You know, like, I think knowing that in your brain is what's really helpful. Sorry, just a little inside baseball for people listening this deep into the podcast. We started one of these podcasts and we got a minute or two in, and then my cell phone started crapping out and Nate couldn't hear anything I was saying, so we had to start it over. So now you know.
And then on the 16th attempt, we got it right.
Right.
Yeah. Insider baseball. Fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think your point though about, like, pool needs to be fun, I think it's a battle for who cares less / who can win more. You know, you have to sort of optimize for, like, how little you care versus how much you, like, want to win. And if you can't turn down your, like, I really want to win buzzer or whatever sensor in your head, you need to make sure that you play super duper carefully. But, like, it's not that fun to play really carefully at a bar, you know? You're just trying to have fun. So I think you just got to turn everything down and, like, realize that it's a different – oh, that's what it is. I actually thought of this, like 6 months ago or something. It's a completely different game. Like, pool in a bar is as different from pool in a pool hall as, like, soccer is from beer pong. You know, it's, like, just a totally different – I mean, it looks very similar. I guess soccer – or beer pong is from basketball, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, if I had a second take on that metaphor, I would have really stuck the landing. But, yeah, it's just like a different beast and a different animal, and you have to think about it differently. Like, a pro basketball player would never get really mad when he lost a game of beer pong. You know, like, it's just you got to, like, change the way your brain thinks about it. Otherwise, you're going to be that asshole who's like, I f*** you, man, and, like the reason why every sitcom writer puts a scene where, like, two people fight at a pool table.
Yep. Just as a side note, I love doing podcasts with you because then I get to beep a bunch of stuff, and beeps make me so happy. I don't know why.
I can't agree with you more, man. I love a beep.
They're so satisfying for whatever reason. They're just so much fun.
I think my theory about why beeps are funny is because they don't actually disguise the word. So you still get the word, but the beep itself is like a robot is telling the video or the audio not to, like, hey, don't say that, that's bad. You know, I think there's, like, some level of, like, you know, taboo in there, and I think it's really funny.
Yeah, I kind of look at them as like an adult fart joke. Like, they're super cheesy, they're super cheap, but they just work, you know? They're just funny.
Well, I think and this is a horrible, horrible thing, but in the third video of the Road to the U.S. Open series, at the 10-minute mark, I can't believe I remember all this, but due to an export error, the beep sound that I put in there at the 10-minute mark is pitched or is decibeled up really high. So it's super, super loud. So if you're listening to that episode, at the 10-minute mark, there's like a little notification that pops up. It's like, hey, by the way, turn your sound down. That's not Whistlin' Dixie. That is a really, really loud beep sound that I put in there. So please save your eardrums and turn it down
now
low.
Now I feel like the last beep I got to make really, really, really loud.
Don't
too.
Do it.
I feel like I got to do it.
I mean, it's a funny meta joke, Nate, but then it's just going to, you know, that this is how these things spread. It's a lot like how the virus spreads. You have to resist the urge to do what you would want to do in order to make sure that there's no spreading of this extra loud beep.
That is, I find that irrationally way more funny than I should. I think.
Yeah, I think it's just a really good numbers joke. You made it up, really tickles the Asperger's part of everybody's brain.
You made up for your crappy soccer analogy earlier with that one.
Thank you.
That one's really good.
Thank you.
Okay, let's get back on topic, I guess. My next question is, do you remember when you put out the very, very first average, not average to good, I guess, the average pool player video? Because that was your original, right? Was the average pool player videos?
Yes. Yeah, the first one was Efren Reyes, the side pocket shot.
Yes. So yeah. That was, am I wrong in saying that was about 2.5 years ago? Maybe.
That's a good question. I mean, if you want to, I'm just going to stall you for 1 second as I quickly jump on my YouTube app and pull it up here. But yeah, 2.5 years ago, let me think. That sounds, 2.5 years ago, that sounds like potentially.
Yeah, now you're maybe, really just dragging this out.
I couldn't get to it in time.
Yeah, you're really dragging this out now.
I'm so sorry. Wait, here we go. March 15th, 2018.
So,
wow. You know what? It's like the 2 year anniversary. Wow.
We're 2 days past the 2 year anniversary.
Amazing.
Did you do anything special?
Yeah, I didn't get coronavirus.
So that's
the occasion.
So that's productive, if nothing else. So I guess finishing out the question, you are now 2 years since you created your very first video.
Very first billiards YouTube. Actually, that's not even true. Since I put the first video on the Kamui channel.
Ah.
Oh, and I'm looking at that. Wow, it's got 2.6 million views. Holy smoke.
That's insane. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Wow. That's what a fun little time we've had.
I got 21 on my last one. Is that good?
21 million? Dude, that's huge, man. Congratulations.
No, just 21.
Ah. 1,000. Gotcha. Yeah, bummer, dude. That's not quite there.
Yeah, just 21.
Yeah. Yeah. 100? 2,100?
Almost. So going back to 2 years ago,
yeah.
How have you actually seen your game improve through all of these different videos and having the opportunities to work with some of the best instructors in the world?
Oh, man. I should have been prepared for a question like that, but I fully wasn't. Yeah, I mean,
Do you know which side of the cue to use now, at least?
Yeah, you don't use the back end of the poker anymore. I think it has improved pretty markedly strategy-wise. I think I think about shots a lot better, and I kind of plan runouts a lot more effectively now. Honestly, I wish I could say it's improved a lot more. I certainly am better at all of the things, like pocketing, position play, all these things. And I don't just like fire balls in and then get way, way bad position. Yeah, I think the mental aspect of things has improved a lot. I've realized that like pool players who play really fast aren't just like playing just to play and mess around. They're just calculating really, really quickly. Like these are players who have already done all of the long thinking calculations in previous days, months, years of their life. And now they don't have to like redo all those calculations. But people like me have to always, always think about the shot in like a checklist. Like, okay, what kind of spin do I need? Where do I want the cue ball after this? Could I scratch? You know, all these questions. So I think if anything, it's like taught me a lot more respect for the game than maybe I used to have. And maybe that's actually a common thing I find as people get more and more practiced at pool and they spend more time learning about it, they realize just how difficult of a game it is.
Yes, it is a game that you just never stop learning. You never stop growing for sure. So Where is your game at these days? Are you, a lot of people, I mean, we see your videos and you do the three games before, sometimes you do the race to three before, but that's the only time we actually get to see you play pool. Other than that, you're kind of just shooting shots or, you know, trying to recreate things. And we don't actually get a good gauge in how you're playing these days. So how are you actually playing? And are you running racks? Are you running sixes, sevens, eights? Where are we running at?
What would a running a six be? Like knocking six balls in? Like, oh, like if it's a nine ball rack and get to the six?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's what it
means. Okay. So yeah, so last time on practicing, I took the rack out, threw nine balls in a rack, broke it, ran it out, ate three sliders, and then didn't run out another rack for 10 more racks.
But you ran out of a rack. You broke and ran a rack.
Yeah. I broke and ran a rack, which felt good. And then I got down to, I broke and didn't make anything on the break, and then ran out to the eight, and then I broke and then whiffed on the one, and then I broke and then ran it down to the seven and had to bank the eight and blew it. I feel like if I could force myself to concentrate for a really long amount of time, I think I could probably break and run two in a row, once a session, and then a handful of break and runs within the session, and otherwise be pretty confident that I would break pretty deep into the rack most times.
Okay. So do you ever play the ghost?
No, I'm scared of ghosts.
Yeah, me too. But they're fun to play sometimes.
Yeah. I sometimes will play the ghost, and I find that if I play the ghost, I am very frequently getting down to the six or seven ball, but then I have to do some fancy breakout shot, and I regularly will miss the breakout shot.
Yeah.
And that ghost will always get him after I miss.
The ghost is a tough, he's a very worthy opponent, He doesn't miss much.
Yeah.
So there's definitely improvement in the game, obviously. After 2 years, you've well over doubled your game, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm also much smarter about playing. Especially in a bar, I'll play a safety shot in a bar now, or I'll play more intelligently in nine ball. So I'm not always firing at the crazy shot and then losing the game, because I'll run out six balls and then blow the seven ball and he'll leave it hanging. And then my opponent will just have nothing to clean it up.
Yeah. It's definitely, it would be pretty bad if, I guess, in 2 years working with some of these players, you weren't able to improve, but
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it shows, the ability to, like you said, you learn actually more probably from watching back the videos than you do actually making them. But you give a lot of growing players the opportunity to, really, really get some of this professional coaching that they might not have the resources or the ability to get on their own. So that's pretty cool. And you're using a platform to really help grow the game. And that's awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Nate. Yeah, I think my favorite thing about doing these is besides actually hanging out and making friends with these players, it's putting these videos up and then having people comment wow, I never knew this thing about the jump, or I didn't realize that I was doing the same thing as this guy's. People often comment, I have a lot of the same problems as this guy. It's great to see this guy miss a shot so I can make it. And then I am reading it and I'm oh, I'm this guy. this person is writing this comment, and I'm oh yeah, that's you're talking about me. That's that. And it makes me feel good that somebody can use my experience to improve their own game. It's fun.
I'll say this, the Alex Pegulayan video that you made where he shoots the ball over the edge of the other ball and draws back the positioning. I watched that video and I knew that shot existed, but I didn't realize how easy the shot actually is. I set it up. I ended up setting up a bunch of times at the Wisconsin State Pool Tournament at my booth, and I was just shooting it. And it's a really, really fun shot. And it's not that difficult. It's actually a pretty easy shot as long as you're not jumping, a full ball. A full ball gets really tough, but the edge of a ball, that shot's super easy and it's super fun.
It's nothing. It's crazy. I was in this place called Brooklyn Billiards over at 11th and Barry in Williamsburg, this new really nice little pool hall that opened up. And I was just playing, I was doing the box drill, the Ralph Eckert center field drill. And someone came up to me and had seen a video and had seen that video. And they're like, wow, I never realized you could do that. I was like, yeah, it's really easy. And the balls were pretty close to set up like that. And I just moved one over and just fired it in immediately, because there's only one variable. You just have to hit it as straight as you can and pretty hard, and then it'll go in. It's so crazy that it that you'd never think you could play that. First of all, you'd never think that shot existed. When I asked him if he would like do a video with me, I set that shot up, I did not realize it was jumping a ball over another ball. I just liked it because the cue ball like jumped up afterwards.
Yeah,
I had no idea that was a possible shot. I mean, like, I guess sort of, if you had really asked me about it, I might have been able to say, yeah, I guess like you could maybe jump another ball over, but I never thought you could aim it, never thought. And then, you know, he did it 5 times in a row, and then I was able to do it. It's amazing. It's wild.
Yeah. I've been playing the game for, at this point, 24 years, and I'd never tried that shot before, and now I haven't had an opportunity to use it in competition yet, but I had a situation where I almost got to, and that would have been fun, but I got lined up on it wrong. But
You know what? When I was in a bar, and I had an opportunity to get the eight ball, to jump the eight ball into the corner for the win, like jump the cue ball into the eight ball. And I called it, and I was like, check this out. And I lined it up, and then I just blasted the eight ball off the table and lost. But it was like, it was the perfect setup. And if I had just like, you know, been Alex Pagulayan, I could have really, really blown some freaking faces that night.
Yeah, well, if we were all Alex Pagulayan, we probably wouldn't be talking right now because we'd be important.
That's true. Well, hey, I bet you could get an interview with that guy. He's great.
Alex is great, and I know him a little bit. I've met him several times.
Oh, what are you doing talking to me? You could be talking to Alex Pagulayan, man.
Well, Alex Pagulayan doesn't have 40,000 subscribers. Actually, he might have.
he could if he wanted to. He could have that in like tomorrow.
Yeah, he could probably do that pretty easily.
Yeah.
And I can't even say that you're funnier than him either, because he's a really, really comical cat. He's really cool.
Well, you could say that I'm funnier if you wanted to. I mean, there's nothing stopping you, dude.
Well, I can never tell a lie.
Ugh. Nate, you've earned my contempt once again.
And this is where the interview goes to crap.
Yeah, right.
So I guess actually at this point, that was all the topics that I wanted to get covered. I still have one last question. Well, two last questions, but they're kind of wrap-up questions. Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
You got any gotcha questions? Trying to nail me to the wall on anything?
Any projects you have coming up?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think we were talking about this before we started recording, but I'm currently editing a video that stars Jennifer Beretta. That should be coming out in the next day or two. That'll be really funny. Well, I don't know. I think it's gonna be pretty funny. She does a really great job. It's like, well, you'll see. So watch out for that. I don't know. The other half of my life is I run a comedy talk show, a live comedy talk show that goes up once a month. It's called An Inconvenient Talk Show. So go follow that on Instagram if you want. You know, do your thing. I don't know. Stay inside. Don't go to the pool hall. Unfortunately, like, we're dealing with a virus right now. And the most important thing we can do, even if we feel healthy or we're like healthy young 28-year-old Nates, is don't go out and potentially get it and then potentially give it to somebody who could potentially give it to their parents. You know, I think the best advice I've heard is act like you already have it. And how can you stop yourself from giving it to other people?
Seems to be some good advice.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So we'll start wrap-up questions because those are fun.
Great.
Given the change of, I guess, the ability to play and, I guess, going to what you just said, how do you plan on continuing to practice and getting ready for the U.S. Open over the next couple months?
That's a great question. I think I'm going to try to keep doing this this center field drill. I think I really enjoy doing that, so it doesn't even really feel like a drill. So I'll keep doing that. And then there's a couple of other drills that I like. And so I am going to do those. And also, Ralph Eckert has a thing called the 10-hour pool power, which I actually did with him when I was in Germany. I just haven't edited that video. So look for that coming out in under quarantine editing now. And I think that obviously, like when I was there, I also had to shoot it. So I haven't totally internalized all of those lessons, but he's got a really great system on like reference lines. and how to figure out like where the cue ball is going to go after it hits two rails, which is like one of the hardest things for me. So he's got a great way to realize that and just like have that knowledge. So I'm going to make sure I try to internalize that as much as possible. And then Hunter taught me about a lot about cueing really straight, really nice and in one line with a more compact stance. So I'm going to practice that. Yeah, I don't know. It turns out there's just like a billion things that you got to practice and be perfect at if you want to be any good at pool. And I'm not good at any of them. So I got to figure all those out.
That's why we practice, right?
Yeah, right.
So then the last question I can get you out on is you work closely with several sponsors, or at least a couple sponsors, and you have access to a lot of these pro players, not only because of the brand that you've built, but because of some of the connections you've made in the game as well. So why don't you take a couple seconds to thank some of the people that have helped you basically get your brand to where it is today?
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, and I also like should have shouted them out much, much earlier in this podcast, but maybe you could even, I mean, I don't expect you to go back and do a bunch of editing, but if you have the time or want to, you could like copy this stuff and put in the first part of the podcast. So I'll even give you a little lead in. Hey, great to be here, Nate. Thank you so much. Before I answer any questions at all, I want to thank my two most favorite sponsors. They are Kamui Brand Chalk and Tips, the best products on the market by a long shot, according to me. And, you know, I'm just a guy, so take my opinion for what it's worth, but they're amazing people. They do everything in-house. They have an amazing quality control system. So Kamui Brand, number one in my book. And also these new guys on the scene who I think are doing a really excellent product and a service to the billiards world, Salotto. It's an app that allows you to match with other pool players in the area who are at your similar skill level, and it'll keep track of your points. And they also partnered with Fargo right now. So like, they're not like whistling Dixie. They're the real deal. Salotto, go download the app right now. They're really good guys. They are based out of Wyoming right now. So go hit them up. And then last but not least, Go Customs. This guy, Goran, who runs Go Customs, sent me a carbon fiber shaft, like a playing shaft, and a carbon fiber breaking shaft. And I love them. They hit really, really cleanly. They don't feel like they're made of styrofoam either. They kind of have a nice solid hit. And I really like playing with them. Obviously, you know, no shaft is going to make you shoot well if you don't practice, but I've definitely noticed an improvement in my game, whether that's psychosomatic or due to this Go Custom shaft.
All right. So obviously, if you support Raleigh and you like the work that he does, it's always a good idea to support the people that support them. So I actually have a Kamui tip on my queue. I
can give. Ooh, hell yeah.
I have a Kamui Tansoft Clear.
Ooh, very nice.
So that is the tip that I use regularly. I've used the Kamui chalk in the past, and I'm just waiting for my sponsor to send me more so I can yell at Bill now. Where's my chalk, Bill?
But, oh, yeah. I should just send you some chalk, dude. I don't have any. I have like one piece, but I'll send that over. I'm not going to be using it for the next 2 months.
Yay. See, this is why you got to get a podcast and or a video channel so that you can get free stuff, because there's nothing better in the world than having a company say, hey, let me send you some free product and let you try it out. It is, Raleigh, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it is like it is the best feeling in the world when a company says, hey, let me send you free stuff. It's great.
Yeah, it feels amazing. So like, just reading between the lines there, if you are a company and you're listening to this,
send me free stuff.
Saying is that he would love to test out anything you got, but look, listen to his chocolatey smooth voice. Nate is gonna talk about your product so lovingly that, I mean, it's free advertising. It's at cost advertising. Listen, companies out there, I mean, let's say you own a billiard shop, right? Send Nate something, a glove, you know, a freaking measle ball, anything. And that guy will be so grateful
that he
will shout out your company, and you'll get flooded with online orders, maybe.
I am a sucker for anything free. It's the greatest feeling in the world.
I can't believe I didn't shut them out even harder, but Society Billiards also, like, they are the reason I'm able to shoot any video is because they let me use their facility for free, and it is amazing. And you know, they're great people over there. Society Billiards in Manhattan.
Definitely. So we got all the niceties out of the way and checked all the boxes. So why don't we start with the interview?
Great. I also think it would be really funny to leave it in the end also, because that's, you know, just a, well, whatever, do your thing.
Well, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to leave that statement right in there too. And this could be fun.
Yeah. It's going to require a little bit more editing than you're used to, Nate, but I also swore a bunch of times, so you probably got to deal with that.
Well, Raleigh, always a pleasure getting to chat with you and getting to do podcasts with you. So I look forward to the future content that we hopefully can create. And thank you for joining me again today.
The pleasure was all mine, Nate. Thank you so much for having me on, man. Thanks for coming to my party. Now that we're all wrapped, bro, it's time to go home.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Q Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.